The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. So this is going to be the first show in July of 2025. So we have formally exited June. That's what comes after June is July, for those of you not aware. But June is National Annuity Awareness Month, so we had focused shows on annuities. Well, we didn't quite get through everything we wanted to talk about, so we are going to do a little bit more annuity talk, in July here. We're not going to do every show as annuities. We're not going to make July honorary Annuity Awareness Month, but we do have a few other things to talk about. So in June on the EDU shows, we kind of described the SPIAs, single premium immediate annuities, that pure, clean income annuity that no bells and whistles, very simple relationship between you and the insurance company, the annuity company. Talked about deferred annuities, deferred income annuities, indexed annuities. We most recently talked about RILAs, registered index-linked annuities, which are kind of a mashup, if you will, between a variable annuity and a fixed indexed annuity. And hadn't quite finished talking about those, and we had also promised people that we would talk about living benefits. So income that can come from these annuities without turning them into the verb, as Jim would say, without actually formally annuitizing them. And those benefits are generally called living benefits, come in various shapes and sizes. So hadn't quite gotten to that. So those are a couple things we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk a little bit more about those RILAs that we were talking about last week, and then get a little bit into living benefits. And then throughout July, because we've gotten a lot of questions about annuities, we'll have kind of annuity heavy shows, or at least annuity, somewhat annuity shows, we'll call them. So partial annuity shows, but not fully annuity based like we were doing in June, officially National Annuity Awareness Month. So that's where we find ourselves today. I've got Jim joining me. Jim's somehow, even though we haven't been physically together, somehow caught the cold that I was struggling with a couple of weeks ago. So his voice is a little bit scratchy, so forgive him that. But we do our best never to skip a show. So rain or shine, good health or bad, we're here delivering another EDU show to you. So Jim, assuming that your voice has recovered enough, I think I've set the show up just fine, and we can talk a little bit more about RILAs.
Yeah, but just so people know, my cold that I thought was allergies, because I was in Ohio and everything is green and flowery there. But I've quickly come to the conclusion that it was not allergies. It's a cold. I did a COVID test. It's not COVID. But I will possibly start coughing, and I apologize ahead of time for that. but if I start coughing uncontrollably, I will mute, and Chris expertly will just pick up and say something brilliant. I'm not quite sure.
Well, either that or I'll edit out the coughing in post-production, we'll call it. So well, you all might not notice it, but if you hear I'm struggling a little bit occasionally, I can't make it perfect. So, but we'll try to clean it up as much as possible for people so it's not too annoying.
Well, that would be very nice, I suppose. Thank mm-hmm. you very much.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right. So kind of what we want to do is wrap up a few more things about RILAs. I did receive an email from someone, and of course, I can't find it. I have the emails from everyone else. We've got a ton of emails over the past few weeks on annuity questions. But someone sent me an email and asked me to mention a few more things about RILAs. And of course, I'm having trouble finding it. But I'm going to have to go from memory on some of the things that he wanted me to say. And I apologize to that listener. I know you sent one. I have looked everywhere and not quite sure I'm going to be able to find it. And no, I can't find it anywhere. Okay, so some of the things that he did want me to point out on RILAs and to be careful on. And one of it is, for those who don't quite know what a RILA is, listen to last week's show. Chris, what day did last week's show come out?
It came out on, let's see, June 25th release.
Okay, so if you're not quite sure what a RILA is, go back and listen to that show on June 25th. Excuse me. And part of what this gentleman wanted me to talk about is that some RILAs come with a six-year term. Not necessarily a penalty phase. That's totally different. The penalty phase, whether it's a RILA, a fixed indexed annuity, a multi-year guaranteed annuity, any type of deferred annuity, will often come with a penalty period where if you try to access your money, you are going to pay a penalty. What he was getting at, and he is correct on this because I have seen this on RILAs before, some RILAs have a term of 6 years for you to go point to point for the measuring of the change in value of the index. Because remember, the RILA is the, I jokingly call it the bastard child one night stand between a fixed indexed annuity and a variable annuity. It is a variable annuity. It retains the potential to lose money like a variable annuity, but similar to a fixed annuity that allows you to fixed indexed annuity that allows you to index potential returns tied to the performance of a market index, although there are a lot of proprietary indexes, which I've warned you guys about to avoid, in my oh-so-humble opinion. Stick with indexes you know, not funky indexes you've never heard of before. So that is the fixed indexed annuity. In a RILA, that is kind of merged in. And they look very similar to buffered ETFs. Buffered ETFs that give you a 10, 20, 30% downside protection. But a buffered ETF generally has a 12-month outcome period, where you just have to hold the ETF for the full 12 months. You can sell an ETF at any time. There's no penalty. But if you want the buffer to truly pay out or the potential cap on the upside to potentially pay out, you need to hold it for that full 12-month term. Then you can sell it or maintain it and hold it. It's totally up to you, but it would reset for another 12 months. Most fixed indexed annuities operate with the same 12-month outcome period. Some fixed indexed annuities also have a 6-year outcome period. But in the RILA realm, it's very common to see 5-year and 6-year outcome periods. And this gentleman wanted me to point that out, and that some of the participation rates or cap rates can be very meaningful in those time periods, but you have to hold it for the full time period to get that. So he just asked that I would mention that to people. He also wanted to mention that you do have the ability with many RILA providers, and I did finally find his email, and it says, I am a financial planner that loves your show. Well, thank you. I've especially loved your annuitous awareness month for many reasons. But one thing I didn't hear you address, and I want to make sure we address all the time at our firm, is that the original value of a RILA might be protected as it goes up, but the earnings are not. I feel our clients would have an issue with this simple example. Invest $100,000 in a 6-year RILA and have it grow by 30% over the next couple of years, but then drop in the following years. Clients get used to their current account balance. So what he's saying there, and he wanted me to warn you on, apparently he uses RILAs. The lore of a 6-year outcome period, Chris, is a much higher cap rate or participation rate. Does that make sense why you would earn more if you're going to wait 6 years?
Totally, because the insurance company can handle the money differently if they know they've got that 6-year period.
So they're going to entice you to choose an outcome period that's 6 years long. And what he tries to go to great lengths to tell his clients is that during that 6-year period, you will still be getting a statement showing the value, essentially the value of the options backing the trade. We talked about that a lot on the buffered ETF shows, so I don't want to get deep into the weeds. And for those, just a little sidebar of what's coming, I have succeeded, hopefully he'll stay true to this, in reaching out to the Calamos gentleman who came on buffered ETFs, specifically to address a few articles that have recently came out by a major asset manager, kind of ripping buffered products a new one. It doesn't surprise me that an asset manager who doesn't offer buffered products will come out with an article bashing buffered products. It doesn't surprise how the industry works. You all know that. It's nothing surprising. I'm just kind of disappointed in what I feel is blatant misinformation in the article. So I reached out to the Calamos rep. Calamos rep has no idea the misinformation that I feel. I don't want to give him ideas of what I feel, and I specifically told him that. But he says, hey, Jim, I'd be more than happy to come on and talk about those articles, because several listeners have sent me those articles and says, hey, Jim, what do you think of these? And I'll share what I feel, but I feel who better to come on and address the articles than the sponsor of these products, not some advisor who uses them in a very narrow way at his firm. I'm talking about me right now. I want someone who actually works for a firm that offers these products. So anyways, I just wanted to throw that aside out there. I hope to wrap that up somewhere in July or August. His schedule and my schedule are hard to pin down. But anyways, just so you guys know, that's coming. Okay, back to this 6-year RILA issue. So if you buy a registered index linked annuity, you often will get a 5 or a 6-year outcome period option in addition to a 1-year outcome. This financial advisor who wrote to me is correct. During that outcome period, you will get an account balance saying, hey, the options backing your trade, let's say he used 100,000 as an example. And let's just, I don't know what the cap rate is, but let's just say the 100,000 is now shown, he said, a 30% return. So you got 130,000. What it's saying is the options trades backing this are now up to 130, meaning the reference asset that these options are tied to is up even more. Mm-hmm. But in other words, the people are seeing this positive return, Chris. Mm-hmm. The next month, if the reference asset drops, so will that 130. It's right. The outcome period is not over yet, folks. It's no different, though, than the buffered ETFs. The buffered ETFs go up and go down, just like the value of these RILAs will go up and down. You will not see this on a fixed indexed annuity because zero is what, Chris, with a fixed indexed annuity, according to the industry?
Well, zero is your hero, and they report the, quote, balance differently.
Correct. So you will not see this type of fluctuation in a fixed indexed annuity. In fact, you generally only get one statement a year from a fixed indexed annuity. On a RILA, because it's a variable annuity, you can log on and see your account balance at any time. Yeah. So he just wanted to point out, and I thought I went to great lengths to explain to you the, I don't know if the husband or the wife or the male or the female was in my joke of a bastard child of a one-night stand. I don't know which one was the variable annuity and which one was the fixed indexed annuity. But the variable annuity, whether it was the guy or the gal in my hypothetical metaphor, variable annuities can lose money. So that gene pool came over to the RILA. You can lose in this. So keep that in mind. Now, another thing he did ask me to point out, and he is right on this, many RILAs, not all of them, will allow you to quote-unquote lock in your gain without waiting for the outcome period to expire. So if you have a 12-month outcome period, you might want to lock in your gain 8 months, 9 months, 10 months into it. You might be satisfied with what you earned. You know you can still go down before the next 2 months in a one-year hold if you're selling 10 months into it. You can lock it in. On a six-year hold, if 3 years into it, you're happy in his example with a 30% cap rate, even though, let's say, over the six-year period, it was 100%, which I've seen before, 100% cap. In other words, you get the full return over 6 years. If you're happy locking it in only 30% of the way, go ahead. But here's what's unique. I have seen some RILAs, when you lock in a term or a segment, they call it, when you lock in a segment while still in that outcome period, some RILAs make you wait. Let's just say, use this gentleman's example. He has a six-year outcome period for a client with $100,000. It's now worth $130,000, but the outcome period's not up. Let's just say they're 4 years into a six-year outcome period. If his client was to lock in the 130, even if the participation rate that he could get was 80%, if he's willing to lock in just 30, he can. Now, some RILAs make people who do that still wait until the original outcome period expires. So in my example, 2 more years. During that time, they generally force you to put your money in their declared rate strategy, which will be whatever the fixed interest rate is. It's generally set every year. They'll force you to do that. That's some RILAs will do that. Other RILAs say, hey, if you lock in a strategy, we will let you take part in that strategy again at the next offering period, which is usually every quarter or every month. So let me put that in English for a RILA that works that way. If you have the six-year hold, and let's say it has an 80% participation rate or a cap rate of of 80% of whatever the market is up, but you lock in 30, you're willing to give up the rest because you're nervous. And there's 2 years left because let's just say there's a tariff tantrum and you thought the market was going to drop through the roof. So you locked it in and you're thinking, oh, damn it. Stocks just kept going up even after this tariff tantrum. What did I do? If your RILA makes you wait to the end of the outcome period, you got to wait 2 more years before you can purchase another indexing strategy. In the meantime, they're going to put you most likely in the declared rate. If your RILA lets you participate as soon as the next offering comes and they're doing monthly offerings, you just have to wait for the next offering and take a position again. So if you're considering a RILA, you may want to find out what are the rules of the RILA if you sell during the outcome period. And if you're sitting there saying, wow, I wish buffered ETFs had this. Buffered ETFs have always had this, folks. Mm-hmm. Chris, if you buy an ETF on Monday, can you sell it on Tuesday, on Wednesday?
Yeah, you have total liquidity there. Now, you don't have the protections that you would gain by holding it to the term, right? The promises that were made in exchange for you being in it during the defined period itself. But you have total liquidity. If it's up, you want to get out, you can. Now, it could be down when you want to get out too. So just because you have liquidity doesn't mean that you have, again, the protections you would have if you violated that holding period intention. But totally, you have access to it.
Right. So the ability to lock in a gain is no big deal. What you're essentially telling, and this helps you to understand the mechanics behind this. It's not, what's that show where the guy was behind the curtain?
Let's Make a Deal, right? Is that what
No. The Scarecrow, the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, that show. Okay.
That show. I've got a cold, so cut me some slack.
No, it's fine. For whatever reason, my mind went to Let's Make a Deal. You want what's behind curtain number
now,
one?
Now, if we have relatively young listeners, I don't think we do, but if we have somebody in their 30s and 40s listening, they're going to be the Let's Make a What?
Right.
We're really dating ourselves. It's called Monty Hall, Let's Make a Deal, for those who don't know. And essentially, you dressed up really stupid and acted stupid and hope that Monty chose you to stand up and he'd give you a deal. You know, I'll give you this 200 envelope. Remember, folks, this is going back to the 70s. I'll give you this envelope with $100 or $50 in it, or you can have what's behind box number one. And you had to kind of choose what you wanted. Anyways, that's Let's Make a Deal. What I'm getting at is the magician behind the curtain. There's nothing magic going on with buffered ETFs, RILAs, and fixed indexed annuities. All those fish are swimming in the same pond. They're doing options trades. That's all they're doing. And they're generally using the same types of options now. And these are options that will trade on exchanges. When you quote unquote lock in, you're essentially telling the RILA provider or the ETF provider, if you sell your ETF before the outcome period expires, or you buy an ETF in the middle of an outcome period, which I strongly recommend against, and it gets beyond the scope of today's discussion. Selling, I can understand if people are panicking and they want to quote-unquote lock in their gain. Buying in the middle of an outcome period, I don't recommend that at all. We can talk about that another time.
Yeah.
But what you do when you tell the insurance company, I want to quote-unquote lock in my gain, is the insurance company just goes and sells some of the options backing your particular trade strategy. These are all listed, publicly traded options. They're very liquid. And the insurance company is no big deal. So they're quote-unquote locking you in. The difference is whether or not the insurance company makes you wait in their cash account, which to me is a way for them to make money if they make you do that, because they're going to be making money off of the yield spread, Chris. All your money's sitting in now their cash account, and they hope to be earning more than what they're paying you. But some will make you sit in their cash account. until your original term has wrapped up. Others will let you get in at the next offering period. So that I just wanted to acknowledge as well. This gentleman is correct. If you have a RILA, you can see variations in it as opposed to a fixed indexed annuity where you'll never see variations and you only get a statement once a year. In a fixed indexed annuity, the insurance company is willing to eat any and all losses. That's what you're paying for. In exchange, you might get shorter cap rates than what you would in the RILA. In the RILA, you're going to, again, like a buffered ETF, have maybe a 10% buffer, a 20, a 30, a 40. I believe a new RILA came out with a 50. That's how much downside protection they'll build in. You're now starting to see RILAs and buffered ETFs. We'll talk about this on another show, offering dual directional, which adds a whole other level of complexity, but an interesting trade-off. We'll talk about that at other times. But thank you, listener, for this. And I just wanted to make mention of that, kind of wrap up the RILA show. The other thing that I did, Chris, and you have no idea why I did this, but I just sent you, well, not just, probably about 5-10 minutes ago, an email with two PDFs. This is a RILA. Can you open both PDFs?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Okay. I've got those.
Hold on. Now I have to open them. Sorry, I've told you to open. I forgot to open them. Okay.
Yeah, so we got two PDFs.
Now
here.
I got them. I do not want you naming the insurance company or the name of the RILA.
Okay.
I'm still hesitant. I'll talk to compliance and see what they feel. But do you remember last week I mentioned to you a year or two ago, I couldn't exactly remember when I started really looking at RILAs, I noticed something unique between a brokered sold RILA and an advisor sold RILA.
Right.
Do you remember that conversation last week, Chris?
Yeah, and we were talking that, you know, typically on the broker sold side, because the insurance company pays the broker a commission, that there'll be a certain period, a penalty period, if you will, to help protect the insurance company from commission churning. And then the advisor sold side, or the fee-based side, we might call it, pays no commission. But then typically those advisors, not all, but typically those advisors will then charge their AUM fee on the dollars you have in there as an alternative to the commission that's going on with the other one. And you had mentioned, or at least you had asked me that, hey, what do you suppose, which one between the two, if they're identical other than being broker sold or advisor sold, which one would have the higher cap rates? And I said, well, you know, common sense would say, because they're not paying the commission, that the advisor sold, again, no commission involved, so the insurance company's not out of commission when somebody opens one of these, should have the higher cap rates. And you said you'd think that, but that's not always the case. So you were, I think, you know, going to say you were going to talk a little bit today maybe about, you know, what circumstances create that anomaly, right? It goes against common sense. You'd think that if the insurance company's out of pocket for an extra expense in the commission, that that would come out of the contract. That would come out of what's being awarded to the clients. And, you know, as I talk about it, as I relay this story from last week, I don't remember if I mentioned it, but my brain, obviously the common sense, I guessed wrong, or at least not that it's always the case, but sometimes the case. But in the case where the broker sold, I think it's got to be the fact that you're locked up into that penalty period. So they're able to do some things differently on the back end, allowing them to award higher cap rates, even though they've paid a commission. So, anyway, if that's the conversation you're referring to, I think I remember it.
Excellent. Very good. So what I wanted to try to teach you guys, because you guys are all do-it-yourself DIYers. So you have been taught a few things. Annuity, bad. Commissions, bad. I'm trying to get you to understand annuities aren't always bad. There's a place for them. Commissions aren't always bad. There's a place for them. Don't get snookered by my industry, the financial services industry, that has cloaked itself in this whitewashed fiduciary term now that's used more as a marketing gimmick than anything, trying to get you to believe that a fiduciary or fiduciary advice is always going to be the purest as the driven snow, virgin snow that's never been skied on or peed on by a husky. It is beautiful. It is always the best. And that a broker soul, that's a piece of dusty coal full of soot. It's evil. It's never the better thing. And I've been trying to tell you guys the truth is somewhere in the middle, and you need to understand how both work. And if you're considering buying these, you should look at both. Because sometimes the broker sold one is better than the advisor sold one. Especially, as Chris rightly pointed out, the advisor sold one, I don't like to say they don't pay a commission. Every advisor sold annuity has paid a commission. Everyone is distributed as a commission. It's just that the commission goes to the insurance middleman that the advisory firm, the registered investment advisory firm, and their investment advisor representative of that firm, who will not have an insurance license, they have to go through a wholesaler to offer these products. That's how they're distributed. They're distributed either through a wholesaler, and that wholesaler can be an independent company, or many insurance companies themselves now have a wholesale desk available for investment advisory firms, registered investment advisory firms, and their investment advisor representatives. And the insurance company will act and actually have agents, captive agents for that insurance company, selling their products through registered investment advisory firms. This allows registered investment advisory firms to still do their marketing gimmick of we're fee only. Our advice is as pure as the driven snow. We're virgins. This is wonderful. Now, I'm being a little harsh because the industry has just turned that into a marketing gimmick, or they just don't quite understand how insurance works. I've been a licensed insurance agent for the last 26 years. I've also been an investment advisor representative of a registered investment advisory firm for the last 20 years. And I have owned a registered investment advisory firm, an SEC registered investment advisory firm, for the last 15 years. So I have no hatred against the RIA market. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's the best way to service people. But I see them trying to sell crap a lot of times under the guise of pure fee advice. And they're ignoring, if you're acting as a fiduciary, you truly have to look at the largest distribution platform of insurance products in existence, which is the broker-sold part of the insurance industry. Insurance for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years has been sold by a commission. I just bought a State Farm policy for my mighty massive Maverick that made it cross-country in Ohio, and I bought renter's insurance for my apartment complex. I didn't have to pay my State Farm agent, right, Chris? Because I just went in there, met a new State Farm agent, lovely woman, and purchased some insurance, and she didn't get paid, right? Because I didn't pay her.
No, you didn't pay her. But they oftentimes like to point that out. Oh, you're not going to pay me anything. The insurance company pays me. So she's getting paid, obviously.
And my premium reflected her pay.
Yes.
I didn't go in there thinking, wow, how does this woman make money? She just spent about 48 minutes with me, walking me through everything, putting insurance on my car, walking me through my renter's policy, getting everything to integrate with my Colorado policies to give me the discounts I was owed. How is she being paid, this poor woman? It's because insurance is sold by commission. The newest realm is insurance that is sold through or distributed through registered investment advisors who all of a sudden love annuities now, because when they're distributed through these wholesalers or directly through a sales channel of the insurance company themselves, where the insurance company employs insurance agents, they are allowed to charge their AUM fee. And for registered investment advisory firms, it's all about AUM. It's all about getting a lifetime stream of guaranteed income from you, all the while trying to convince you that you don't want a lifetime stream of guaranteed income for yourself from an evil insurance company. But they want nothing more than to charge an uncapped AUM fee. And the more assets they can get under their management, lo and behold, the more they make. But the implication is, because there is no evil commission being paid to them, that somehow this product is going to be better than the one with the evil commission. And I just keep trying to point out the obvious to you, and if you're an advisor listening and you don't quite understand this, to you as well. All of these advisor-sold fee-based annuities do pay a commission. They pay a commission to the wholesaler.
Yeah, it's a smaller one than the
significantly smaller
registered agent would get. So, but it is there.
But if the implication is commissions cloud your judgment and make you push products that may not be in the best interest to a client, that's the implication, then one must assume a registered investment advisory firm and its investment advisor representatives who don't understand annuities, never sold an annuity, always hated annuities because they couldn't charge their AUM fees on it, how do they know the wholesaler who chooses the insurance policy, makes the recommendation of which annuity to use, how do you know they're not being swayed, albeit by a much smaller commission, but one is still being paid? I have shared openly, I use one of these wholesalers, I won't say who, and during this time period when I was evaluating them many years ago, I asked if they would share with me the commission they will earn on any annuity they recommend I offer to my clients, as well as the commissions being paid currently by any annuity that they offer that were not recommended to my client. They refused. That's always left a bad taste in my mouth. So we're told that annuities commissions will somehow cloud the judgment of your financial advisor who you know, you hopefully trust, you understand, but somehow the commission won't cloud the judgment of the wholesaler. I just never quite understood that, Chris. I'm just pointing out the obvious here. Okay, back to this. What did surprise me is what I discovered several years ago when I started looking at RILAs being offered by one of, if not the largest seller of RILAs right now. And I got a hold of these two documents that Chris now has. Do keep in mind, when you buy a RILA or a fixed indexed annuity that has been distributed through a broker, they earned a commission, and what you see is what you get as far as cap rates. But that is not the same with a policy that was distributed through a registered investment advisory firm and or their investment advisor representative who is also going to impose their asset management or AUM fee on top of the annuity and pull that fee out every year, usually every quarter. They cannot, according to the IRS private letter ruling that allowed this to happen, they cannot charge more than 1.5% a year on any money coming out of an annuity. But if they're charging 0.8%, 0.7%, 1%, 1.2, 1.5, 1.49, as long as they don't breach 1.5, you have to adjust the cap rate, the amount of upside that you will get in the RILA, by the fee the advisor is going to take from your account. Does that make sense, Chris? Seriously?
I think so. Just have to realize that that's an ongoing burden. If you're under that structure, under that arrangement with the advisor that puts you in it, that that's going to affect you each and every year that you have this.
So I just assumed that there would be quite a substantial difference mm-hmm. in the cap rates between a brokerage sold and an advisor sold.
Right.
Even though there is still a commission being paid to the wholesaler, Chris rightly pointed out, it's minuscule compared to the 6 to 7% that the broker sold RILA paid the broker. It's probably 50 basis points, 40 basis points, 30 basis points. Wholesalers make it up on volume, selling hundreds, if not thousands, of these a day. But that's not what I found. And I called the insurance company to make sure I was understanding this paperwork correctly. So I dug it up, and I just wanted to show you a couple of things. Now, this is going back. I thought it was 2 years ago. It's only going back a year ago. So, man, time just feels like a blur when you get to my age. Chris, without naming the insurance company, mm-hmm. you will see at the top of those two pages, clearly with its logo, cute little logo, by the way, mm-hmm. you see the name of the insurance company, correct?
I do.
On the far right, directly across the name, one says series blank and the other says series blank. Right. What are the two blanks?
One says series ADV, which I assume is the advisor sold, and the other is series B for probably broker sold.
Correct. Now you will see directly below that the name of the annuity. Obviously, mm-hmm. one is distributed on a broker platform, one is an advisor right. platform, so the names are different.
Yep.
But it also tells you the type of annuity, which is identical. Right. Don't mention the names. But what type of annuity are these?
Both are labeled variable annuity.
Variable annuity. RILAs are variable annuities, mm-hmm. but this happens to be a RILA. Directly below it, it says effective cap rates. Mm-hmm. Can you confirm that the dates of both are identical?
They are, in fact, identical.
Yep. Which were?
Which were January 19th through February 1st of 2024. So about a year and 5 months old.
So these are old. I have not been able to get the newer ones. I will try to. We're not going to get into all of the different segments. Mm-hmm. We're only going to look at two segments, okay. standard and step up.
Okay.
So you can clearly see on both of them, little box, one says standard mm-hmm. segments.
Right.
These are standard duration. What is the duration of these segments, Chris, on both of them? Are they identical?
They are both 1 year segment duration. Yes.
1 year outcome periods. Mm-hmm. Then they show these are buffered. So they offer a degree of principal protection. Are the buffers identical?
They are. They've got choices for 10, 15, 20, and 40% buffers.
So what this is, similar to a buffered ETF, you can buy these segments. They call them segments instead of share classes. It's just a segment. You can buy a segment, and depending on the amount of buffer, that's how much protection you will get from losses if your particular segment and the index tied to it drops in value. Mm-hmm. And you can have a 10% buffer, a 15, a 20, and a 40 with this particular company. They're all different.
Yep.
This particular company is offering a 10, 15, 20, and 40. And you probably all understand if you have, before we get into it, can you also confirm that there's one extra index or one extra index in the advisor sold one? We'll ignore that one. But the other indexes, you can read the names of them and that they're identical on both.
They are. There are five index choices. And they are all identical between the two. On the advisor sold, there's a sixth index choice that doesn't appear on the broker sold option for some reason.
And those indexes are the S&P 500, mm-hmm. the Russell 2000, the Morgan Stanley Far East Asia, the NASDAQ 100, and the Morgan Stanley Emerging Markets.
Yep.
So those indexes are identical. These are not, they're technically proprietary. S&P owns the right. S&P, Russell owns the Russell.
But they're not created by the insurance company. These are
correct.
Separate, independent, well-known, recognizable indexes.
Correct.
Yes.
And when you buy a buffered ETF or a RILA, which is the insurance industry's answers to structured products and buffered ETFs, you can index to these more mainstream indexes using options trades to protect you if the index drops, but give you a certain amount of gain if the index is up. We've talked about how we like to use these. I've also mentioned that I'm not totally against RILAs. I just haven't used them. I prefer the ETFs for a variety of reasons. Okay. Here's where it gets interesting. Chris, let's look at the advisor sold annuity first.
Mm-hmm.
The S&P 500 1-year duration segment, point to point. What is the cap rate, at least what was the cap rate 1 year and 5 months ago from the day we're recording this, July 1st of 2025, mm-hmm. for the 10, 15, 20, and 40?
Cap rates on the advisor sold side first are 18.5 for the 10% buffer, 14.5 on the 15, 13.5 on the 20% buffer, and 10.5 on the 40% buffer.
Perfect. Now, Chris, is it out of the ordinary that if you're going to have a 40% protection, you're not going to get as much upside than if you were to take just a 10% protection?
No, that's the natural trade-off. The insurance company, it's more expensive for them to create the strategy that gives you, say, the 40% buffer versus the 10. And that expense for that strategy comes right out of your cap rate. So the potential upside is lower when you have got the higher downside protection. It's a natural trade-off.
Absolutely. So now let's go over to the broker sold product. And we have mm-hmm. the same, Chris has already confirmed, the same 10, 15, 20, and 40% downside buffers. The same, exact same five indexes. There's one additional index, the Euro Stock 50, is in the advisor, but not in the broker for some reason. Chris, beginning with the S&P 500, mm-hmm. I will read the advisor cap that you just said. You're going to read the evil broker cap, which mm-hmm. must be lower because mm-hmm. it paid a commission.
Right.
So the S&P 500 10% buffer advisor sold before taking anything out for the advisor's AUM fee, your cap rate was 18.5%.
Right.
How much less was the brokered?
Well, this is that anomaly you're talking about. The broker side, the cap rate is 19%, despite the fact that they paid a commission. And you, the owner of the policy, are not paying any fee or commission. The insurance company has paid it, but somehow you have available to you a 19% cap rather than your 18.5%. Weird.
But I have to reduce my 18.5 by my advisor's AUM fee, and he's charging mm-hmm. me 1%. So you're telling me my fiduciary advisor in my best interest thinks 17.5 cap rate is better than 19?
Well, maybe they'll point out that there's no penalty period for the advisor sold side, and that's the price you pay.
True.
Maybe
that's worth me getting mm-hmm. substantially less upside. That's getting close to almost 20%, not quite 20% after adjusting for my advisor fee. Well, this must be made up then on the 15%. So if I had the advisor sold 15% buffer, I'm only going to get 14.5% cap rate before my advisor's fee. How much lower than 14.5% is the broker when it's got to be a lot lower?
Nope. Sorry to burst your bubble. It's also a half percentage point higher at 15 instead of 14.5. As is the case on the 20 and the 40, all of the options for the S&P 500 index choice are the cap rate is half a percentage point higher on the broker sold than on the advisor sold. And then you have to obviously, to compare apples to apples, take the advisory fee that your advisor is charging you out of that cap fee as well to make a valid comparison. So it gets even worse.
When I spoke to the insurance company almost a year and a half ago on this, my explanation was there wasn't enough distribution, enough competition. They expected the cap rates to start getting much, much closer to each other. So I will share with you, I'm going to try to get both of these sheets again. I'll be able to get it. I just don't know when I'm going to have the time. And I'll share with you a year and a half later if these cap rates are getting closer. One interesting thing to look for, though, there are certain segments for some bizarre reason where the opposite is true.
Yeah.
That the advisor has a slightly higher cap rate. So it all depends on the amount of downside buffer in the index. But every now and then you'll see that 50 basis point switch. Do you see that, Chris? I'm trying to find one. Doesn't happen all too often, but I'm looking for it.
On the NASDAQ 100. On the NASDAQ 100, we have the opposite situation a little bit, where the advisor sold on the 10% buffer gets a 22% cap rate, where it's only 21 on the broker sold. So we're seeing the opposite on that one, but it's not the same as the S&P 500 version for some strange reason. So I think the moral of the story, that as I've glanced through this and you've looked at it, it isn't just that you should say the broker sold's always better or the advisor side's always better. It's going to depend on the particular segment length you're looking for, the index you're interested in, and the buffer that you're interested in. You've got to get down to that level of specificity in order to say the broker sold one is better or the advisor sold one is better. Always
exactly.
Remembering
look
on the
at
advisor
the Morgan,
side. Yeah, you
look
need
at
to,
the Morgan Stanley mm-hmm. one, the EAFE.
Mm-hmm. That one is Europe, Australasia, Far East. And that's a huge difference for some strange reason. The broker sold has a 60% cap rate on the 10% downside buffer. The advisor sold's only 30. That's
30, folks.
That's a huge difference.
Yet the advisor sold, because it doesn't, quote unquote, pay an evil commission, is somehow peddled as being purer than the broker sold. I told you before, if you're going to do this and you're going to try to get an advisor sold annuity, you should ask your advisor to also show you the cap rates for the broker sold. He or she may mm-hmm. not be able to get them because they don't have an insurance license. They may have to do a little bit of digging or try to get hold of a colleague who does have an insurance license. Or perhaps they're like me and do maintain an insurance license. So I'll be able to dig out the newer ones. And I want to see if the insurance company is right that these disparities got significantly closer. But I just picked, I've had this for a while. And as Chris was talking, when I saw that the advisor sold one to the, what is it? The EAFE, I always forget what it stands
for. It's Europe, Australasia, and Far East, EAFE. So it's essentially a global fund minus the U.S. and Canada, but minus North America.
And I always thought it was Morgan Stanley, but I could be wrong on that.
It is, MSCI? Yeah. MSCI okay. is Morgan Stanley Capital International, MSCI.
Okay. So that's kind of a default foreign index to see. The advisor one having a 30% cap rate, but the broker one a 60% cap rate on the 10% downside buffer, that's crazy. But on the 15% buffer, the advisor sold had a 21% cap rate, but the broker had 25%. And the advisor sold one on the 20% buffer had a 16.5% cap rate, the advisor one excuse me, the advisor one had a 16.5% cap rate. The broker sold one had an 18.5% cap rate. And don't forget, on the advisor one, you still have to subtract out annually the advisor fee. Whereas the broker sold one, the commission is paid up front and is all baked in to the cap rates that you see. That's all I wanted to point out. I have nothing against broker sold and advisor sold. I have a lot against uncapped AUM. I despise it. I do not think it is in the best interest of a client at all. It's in the best interest of the advisory firm, the advisor themselves, the private equity investors who are investing like gangbusters in our industry, making money hand over fist. They are great for companies like Fisher Investments. I hate annuities and so should you. They would love nothing more than to keep charging their AUM fee, giving themselves a nice steady stream of lifetime guaranteed income for as long as you're their client. But they're loath to tell you to go get your own lifetime stream of guaranteed income. So I'm just trying to get you guys to keep your minds open. Don't fall victim to the marketing shtick and gimmicks when considering annuities. Learn about them. You guys are smart. You guys are much smarter about investing than I am. I guarantee you, there's people listening to this who know a hell of a lot more than I know about investing. That's why I have Travis, a CFA, doing all my back office stuff, because he knows what the hell's going on. You guys geek out on this stuff. Start geeking out and learning about annuities as well. Don't hate them. Don't love them. Don't fall victim to a flashy salesman. Do your own homework and compare both distribution channels, broker sold and advisory sold, especially if your advisor is going to impose an uncapped AUM fee on top of your annuity. It may not be in your best interests. And I'm hard-pressed, at least 1 year and 5 months ago from July 1st of 2025, I'm hard-pressed to see where this advisory annuity was in the best interest. If the advisor is making the recommendation for a RILA, I can't see why the advisory RILA was the best one he or she could have recommended. The broker one eats its lunch if you're looking at cap rates. I do not know if there is a liquidity or if, I don't know the difference, and I'll try to find out. Is there a lockup period on the broker sold one that is not being adjusted for on the advisor sold one? I don't know. I will have to see. But outside of that, if your aim was to kind of get growth, which is why you would buy these, with a degree of principal protection, and you still have to pay an advisory fee on top of your advisory annuity, and the amount you're going to earn in a cap rate is equal to or already less than, in some cases, substantially less than the broker sold one, I have no idea how that annuity is being touted as some fiduciary, wonderful product, but the broker sold is evil. I've said this before and I'll say it again. A commission sold product has the moniker of a rat, and a broker sold product, excuse me, a advisor sold product has the monitor or the visualization of this cute, furry little squirrel. Everybody loves squirrels. Everybody hates rats. And that somehow fees are wonderful and commissions are evil. But I point out time and time again, they're both rodents. It's just how is that fee being debited and how is your advisor being paid? Yep. You need to look at both sides. Anything you want to add, Chris? Because this went much longer than I wanted. We'll do living benefits another time. But I do thank the listener who wrote that email. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think it's, you know, we've talked about this, but to actually bring in example numbers so people can see we're not just claiming this is true. This is actual, you know, these are actual numbers. Now it's for a specific insurance company, a specific time period, about a year and 5 months ago. The point's still going to be true. You're going to find these anomalies one way or the other. And you should be watching out for yourself if you're interested in one of these. know that there's two channels to essentially, you know, buy, if not identical, then, you know, very similar offerings, and don't discard the traditional. So this is, I mean, I never imagined I'd be defending traditional insurance agents in my life on the show, right? Because I've got, you know, issues with somehow some of them run their business and deal with clients and et cetera, as far as, you know, upholding some type of fiduciary standard, which they're not held to, but they can choose to behave in such a way. So that's, you know, there's those issues that I have still, but here, you know, no, it's not, and it's not because the agents are good or bad. It's just, that's how the insurance companies have chosen to distribute their products. It's just the reality of it. And there's a lot of variables going on in the back room that could cause one channel to be better than the other for you. And that's what you want. You want the product, if you're interested in one of these, that's going to give you the best benefits for owning this thing, right? It's about you. It's not about, and both of these people who are getting you into it deserve to be rewarded in some way, right? We don't work for free. They don't work for free, shouldn't be expected to. So I don't think you should fault them for trying to make money selling these things. It's their job, right? But don't assume that the commission-based traditional side is going to be inferior as to for what you get. We've given specific examples here where it's not always true. Sometimes it is. So it's not, again, you can't just go one or the other. It's more complicated than that. Need to look into it. And an advisor or agent who's doing their job for you, who's doing a good job for you, I think will be transparent on this and will point it out. And if you've got an advisor, an AUM advisor out there, I believe they should be shopping it and saying, well, you could get, you know, I know you're interested in this. You want to put X number of dollars, $200,000 into it or whatever the number is. And the version I have access to gives you this, but the broker sold. So you should probably, you know, I can give you a referral to an agent who can put you in that because I'm not an agent. I can't sell you this product because I'm on the advisor side alone. Or maybe somebody's dually registered, right? And would be able to help you with it. But I think they should acknowledge it's out there.
Right.
Otherwise they're doing exactly what they accuse the commission side, especially the insurance agents they're competing against as a financial advisor, then you're doing exactly what you accuse them of doing. Talk about hypocrites, right? A lot of people in the AUM field will just criticize insurance agents up and down the board because they only sell limited products. They're not exposing it to everything. They're not being fiduciaries, etc. I think an insurance agent who realizes that they don't have the product that's best for their clients should be referring them out to somebody. You don't shove them in something just because that's all you have to sell. That's obnoxious. AUM people shouldn't be shoving them into stuff that only that they have access to because it's all they have access to. It's not the client's fault, especially if you're holding yourself out as a fiduciary. You should be saying, hey, you can get this exact same thing, only better, by going to my friend down the street who's an insurance agent. They'll get paid a commission, but who cares? You've got a better product through that channel than going through me. So
I think well said, Chris. I like that. And I will try to get the latest series quotes and we'll compare them. But I think you've learned a little bit today, and hopefully throughout this whole series, I still will do a show on on living benefits, because I'm trying to go full circle around from single premium immediate annuities to living benefits, which are trying to keep an income annuity as a noun and not a verb. I have used living benefits in the past. I still favor SPIAs, and 99 times out of 100, a SPIA dollar for dollar will still work, but not all the time. So we try to look at both. And that's why I want to talk about living benefit riders. But living benefit riders take the simplicity of a SPIA and make it outrageously complex. Mm-hmm. And I find that these living benefit riders succeed in one thing: clouding up something that should be very easy and masquerading it with bonuses and pretend accounts with guaranteed compound growth rates and the ability to access your money if you want it. All these things that are used to, wow, this thing sounds great. But if you stop and truly understand what's going on, you begin to realize, yeah, I could probably do the same thing with a spear for less money. Exactly. But you can't then charge your AUM fee on it or earn on the broker side an outrageous commission. So anyways, I do want to talk about living benefit riders. And just like I tried to teach you today, I look at both. I think any investment advisor representative listening to this needs to look at both and have a relationship with a commission-based insurance agent that you trust. So you can say to him and her, hey, I got a client and I'm thinking of putting them in this and net of my AUM fee. These are their cap rates in this product. Does this insurance company have a similar broker sold product that will pay a commission? If so, please let me know and let me know what the cap rates are so I can be certain that the recommendation I'm making to my client is in fact the better option for them. And the sad thing is few investment advisor representatives do that. And to throw the insurance industry under the bus, few, if any, do the opposite. Maintain a relationship with an investment advisor representative who can offer these fee-based products distributed on a platform that an insurance agent cannot distribute on. And say to them, hey, I'm thinking of putting a client in this broker-sold, commission-based product. Anything on the advisory side that does better net of your fee? What would you charge my client to go into this net of your fee so I can see? You're not going to find that too often, if at all. That's why it's up to you guys. And most people listening to this are never going to buy a RILA because that's not in your realm. You are do-it-yourself investors and you understand investing. But you're at the vanguard, the forefront of your friends, your colleagues, your neighbors, your family, your children perhaps, or parents who are going to be buying these. And rather than you just knee-jerk reaction, trying to sound like Ken Fisher saying, I hate annuities and so should you, you should be saying, hey, you know what? I know enough about annuities to get me in trouble, but let me look at this because I have kind of a few ideas. And let's, if you're truly wanting it, let's make sure we look at the two distribution channels that exist now, investment advisors and brokers, and see which one might work the best. That's what you guys should be doing as well. Job is to convince someone not to do it. Your job is to make sure somebody understands how to filter out the glitz, the glamour, all the shiny little, like a fishing lure, if you guys like to fish. That fishing lure that can have all sorts of things. There's sometimes feathers and little silver things and gold things and little chains and little whizzes that make noise. Sometimes you can see a lure that has all of this crap on it because it's just trying to confuse and attract the fish. And that's what a lot of these annuities do. And we'll get into that with living benefit riders. They throw so much crap on there. It's like this fishing lure that the average fish or the average person, not you guys, if you guys were a fish in a small little cow pond out in a pasture, you would be that 8-pound bass that nobody seems to be able to catch because you're just too smart to fall for this crap that's being thrown into the water. But it's all those other little bass that you know that can't help themselves. Oh, that shiny little thing. Let me go get it. Your job is to help these people by understanding what I'm trying to teach you. And as today's email rightly pointed out, and that was from an advisor, I didn't cover nearly everything. It's impossible. We would have to dedicate this to, we could do one show a week on just annuities. Chris could do one show a week on just Social Security. We're trying to jam all this in, plus retirement, plus IRA questions, to two shows a week. Just not enough time and ability for us to do it. But I'm trying to get you guys to understand and learn. So anyways, I digress. beginning. We might do next week the living benefits. I haven't decided, or it might be something different. But we do have three guests that are going to be coming on. Chris, you have no idea about any of this. We are going to have supposedly Mark again from Calamos to specifically answer a couple of articles that came out about buffered products. And I will also share. I respect the firm that came out with these articles. I just don't respect the way it was written and the methodology behind it. I think they were being purposefully deceitful. But anyways, I will let Calamos defend themselves. We're also going to have a sponsor of what are called structured notes. I talked a lot about structured notes, so I'll just mention them in passing when we got into annuities, especially RILAs, and to a lesser degree, fixed indexed annuities. And I mentioned the structured notes, which are distributed by banks. So I reached out to some wholesalers and structured notes. Because they're sponsored by banks, getting through their compliance department has been a royal nightmare. But I think I have it to the point where we're going to be able to come on, not talk about specific structured notes per se, but in general, what they are, how they work, the pros, which they want to push, and the cons, which I want to make sure I can put in there. And trust me, folks, you know I will. So they have also agreed to come on. And the third person, I can't remember, but I was all excited, Chris. I have three. Oh, my God.
Wow.
It's going to be a surprise for me, too, when I realize who the hell it is. I can't tell.
That was a lot of buildup for him. Yeah.
There's a third. What the hell?
Oh, was it related also to what we've been talking about recently, or is this because we haven't done estate planning for a while. We should probably do
it was not Shelley for the estate planning.
Yep.
Oh, my Lord. I'm sorry, folks. Y'all are laughing your asses off.
So we're going to have a massive cliffhanger. Yeah, cliffhanger here.
Yes, for me too. So I have to figure out who the third person is coming on.
Hopefully by the next show, we'll figure it out. And then they're not coming on the next
show. So there is a third guest as well that I all of a sudden had a senior moment. I am totally clueless. And now I'm just digging myself further and further into a hole. So I'll wrap up.
Okay.
But anyway, some good, exciting shows that hopefully you guys are going to learn a lot on. And I'm going to now try to research. I'll tell you all next week who's coming on, because it's going to be as big to me as it is to everyone else.
Well, sounds good. So we want to thank everybody for listening. As always, if you want to send in questions for our Q&A show or suggestions for more annuity chats, either one, send those emails directly to jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. Put in the subject line that's a question or a comment for the podcast, and then a couple words about to the topic. And we'll get into some non-annuity shows here in July. So if you've been gritting your teeth through June because you had no interest in annuities, hopefully we at least gave you a few nuggets to chew on, something to be aware of with annuities. But those of you who have been dreading it, we'll be moving on to some other stuff. Obviously, annuities come up periodically, even in non-annuity awareness month shows, but it'll be a lot less focused upon as we move forward. So
I got it, Chris. Before you, thank you. I cheated, folks. I had to look it up.
Okay.
A gentleman who was recently in the Wall Street Journal who joined the Ed Slott group by listening to this show. And I met him not at this last Ed Slott, but the Ed Slott before that. I forget where the hell we were. So about 7-8 months ago, he sent me a great email of a conversation he had with Ed Slott and got Ed Slott to rethink cash balance plans. And something that Ed specifically said during our last meeting just a month and a half ago. And he sent me a wicked good email. I was like, wow, thanks for sharing all this. And he works for a company that offers cash balance pension plans. And I said, would you want to come on the show and talk about cash balance pension plans? Because we're seeing them more and more, what they are, how they work, and the strategies that your firm does in helping very, very narrow sect, I will admit, but helping professional corporations, doctors, attorneys, other very, very, very highly paid professionals put millions aside. And that's where Ed had an issue with the article in the Wall Street Journal. Until this gentleman pointed out to Ed, I am that guy. I'm the guy that the Wall Street Journal quoted. And he gave Ed his side of the story. And Ed personally reached out to him a few days later and thanked him and said, hey, I'm going to start looking at these differently as well. It's going to be a really cool show. Mm-hmm. And even if you are not able to create a cash balance plan for yourself, or even if you don't have one, I think you're going to find it interesting. Mm-hmm. That's the other guy that's coming on.
Oh, that will be interesting. Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Well, I look forward as well, just like our listeners hopefully do. Right.
I was excited when I finally figured out who the third person was.
No, that's great.
It was new for me as well.
That's great. Well, sounds good. Everybody stay healthy and safe, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.